फिर से करो.
इन एवरी हार्ट बीट ऑफ लाइफ देयर इज अ स्टोरी.
म्यूजिक बीइंग अ पार्ट ऑफ आवर पर्सनल ट्रांसफॉर्मेशन और एनीथिंग ऑफ दैट सॉर्ट. There is a reason why, like, music brings us together. Why do we have a national anthem?
With each shared experience, there is an invitation to each one of you to introspect, to question, how does this resonate with me?
My whole issue with the independent music scene is, like, there's so, like, artists take at least, it's so expensive to make music that it takes at least 2-3 years before you release an album.
Join us as we dive into tales that feel rewritten from the pages of our own lives.
Music has this ability to, like, bring you together.
Reflect on each narrative and ponder how these tales mirror your own journey. Because in every shared story, there's a spark waiting to ignite your own path of personal transformation. This is Saujanya, your host, welcoming you to our new series, The Change Catalyst, from Attitude Makeover. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Attitude Makeover. This is your host, Saujanya Shetty. As part of the Change Catalyst series, we have a really awesome guest, May Mariam Thomas, today. May is the creative genius behind the Made in India podcast and is also the brainchild behind this platform that she's created, where she nurtures as well as celebrates indie artists and indie music. As we go into traversing through May's journey today, one of the curious questions I'm going into this conversation with is, does music really serve as a change catalyst for both personal transformation as well as a collective transformation? I have my own thoughts on this. I believe it does. And if it does, how does it do it? So that and a lot more is what we're going to talk today with May. I want to start with, what were early years like for you? And when did you get introduced to music, as far as you can recollect?
Oh my God, like, probably while I was in my mom's womb. I don't know. I think my mother was always someone who's a bit of a, just like your mom, but in a very different way. My mom taught herself guitar. You know, she, I think one of the first songs I ever learned on guitar was House of the Rising Sun by The Animals. My mom used to listen to a lot of music. And so I think I just grew up listening to music because of my mom, really. And, like, our whole family, like, sings. So, you know, if you were at any family reunion, 100% people are going to be singing. So, yeah. And then plus, like, you know, things like going to church and singing hymns and, yeah. So I feel like my music education's always kind of been there in the background because my mom. And, yeah. And then every part of whatever you would consider had music attached to it. So we would watch films. And then even in the films, my mom would be like, wasn't that music amazing? Was that song awesome? And then we'd get obsessed with, like, I used to get obsessed with, like, OSTs. But yeah, so I think music was always, like, a really big part of my life, in the sense that it was just always around. My mom always knew which was, like, the coolest song that was on the charts. And yeah, so I think it was also because, you know, there's this phrase that I learned very recently through another friend of mine called being a third culture kid, which is you grow up in a culture that's not necessarily the one you're originally from. It's not the same as being born in another country. It's that a lot of us, like, are born in India, grow up part of our life in India, and then live in the Middle East or live in... So my mom was a third culture kid. So she was born in Aden, which is now Yemen. She lived for 10 years in Hong Kong because my grandpa was a banker there, and then came back to India. So she and her brothers were really into a lot of really cool music. And they had, like, this incredible record collection. Like, my grandpa had a really great record collection. Things like Glen Campbell. My grandma still sings, like, Jim Reeves songs. You know, and we, like, sometimes when I go see my grandma, I just went to go visit her for her birthday in August. And, like, we would wander around, like, you know, and suddenly my grandma will just sing a song that she remembers, like, you know, from her younger days. And in that sense, that I think music has just always been around in general with my family or with the kind of music they were into. And so, yeah, I don't think that was anything new in terms of not having a love for music. So it was just, it's there. It's always in the background in the sense it isn't, it never feels like an effort. It always feels like something that's just part and parcel of your life, really. So, yeah.
And what was early years like? Did you talk to us a little bit about yourself in the early years?
I guess I'll just start from the beginning. So like most, I mean, I was the old, I have a younger brother. I'm the older sibling. I think usually like it's a tradition that the first child is always born in the mother's house. So I was born in Kerala. I was barely there for 6 months because my parents actually lived and worked in Bombay. And then we were living in Bombay for a few years, and my father got a job in the Middle East, which is where we moved there when I was probably around maybe 4 or 5 years old. And then in the Middle East, we lived there. I mean, I pretty much, my dad still technically lives there, but I was in international school there. I, you know, sort of spent, I think, from maybe second or third standard all the way till 6th, 7th standard in Qatar and Doha. And then my parents put us in boarding school. So I was in a place called Rishi Valley School in Andhra. And then from 7th standard to 12th standard, I was there. So that's pretty much all of my growing up years and kind of just flitting between different parts of India, Middle East. So yeah, I'm one of those like cliched Malayalis that grew up in the Middle East, but yeah.
So I think when we were talking, when we connected earlier, you spoke about creating these mixtapes. That's something I resonated with very early on as well. I think for me, I was exposed to all kinds of, all genres and all types of music. I loved ghazals. I loved Sufi music. I loved metal. I loved it. It was just the mood of the day, and I used to make my own mixtapes. And I think that's one of the things you took pride in, which is discovering this cool song and really talking about it or connecting over it. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the thing was that I guess that this is kind of like one of the things that is partly inspired what actually Made in India, my indie music podcast, is about. A lot of people, when people want to know, like, okay, so where did this show or this idea come from? And I think it was just, at the time, I was quite like jaded by radio in general. You know, I kind of felt like there were so many things that I wanted to do while I was on the radio that I just wasn't able to do because of whatever sort of restrictions that you have in the general media corporate world. And when I left radio, I was kind of freelancing for a little bit. And then with regards to like the show that I wanted to make with which is Made in India now, was that the thing that I enjoyed when I was younger was that listening to the radio to discover music, right? And I felt like that didn't exist in the same way that I remembered when I was younger, which is what Made in, which is where kind of the origin story of Made in India, my show, really comes from. And I guess when I was younger, my mom, like, there was a tape deck that I had. And I think every kid remembers that there was like one, like there were two decks. So in one of them, you could put a blank cassette and then you could just like record music off the radio. So that's what I used to do when I used to discover like a cool new song. I'd be like, ah, and then I used to press like the two buttons you had to press down to like record. That's what I used to do. And I'll have these half recorded songs from the radio on so many cassette tapes, but that's the way that I discovered music at that time. And yeah, and at that time I was listening to like Qatar Broadcasting Service, QBS Radio, and they used to be these really cool British RJs, but I used to hate it when the RJ spoke in the middle of a song and I'm like, you ruined my recording. So but yeah, it was, those were the things, like, I mean, those were, I was like, well, I wasn't like specifically making mixtapes as such. It was just, that was the way in which I discovered music.
I want to switch gears a bit now. Yeah. Indie. You know, when I initially started thinking of what is a good conversation to have, I went everywhere. I honestly went everywhere. And then I started with very basic, trying to understand indie music. So I listen to a lot of genres. Like, you know, I listen to pretty much everything, every language as well. Like, you know, I love Down South, Ilaiyaraja. I love Rajkumar's songs too. I really like Limp Bizkit, Audioslave too. You name it. I go everywhere, rap music. I just go everywhere. And so as I started reading more about indie, I felt it's an attitude, and it's got a girth around it. It's got grit. It's sort of something like a DIY attitude sort of thing. And so I want to start with, have I got this as a, it's not a genre, is it? What is indie, first of all?
I mean, so I look at it in a very, I think the way in India to look at independent music is that it is not, because when you talk about the music industry in general, the music industry is the film music industry. So when I talk about independent music, it is basically that you own usually 100% of the rights of your music and you're making original music. It is not film music, because that's really different. And it might not be film. I mean that in sort of the broader general sense. I think that as much as you might have, you know, a young sort of singer-songwriter from Shillong, and then go all the way to like, Badshah is also an independent artist, and so is Indian Ocean, and so is, and so in that sense, when I say, and this is very much tied to India particularly, because the Indian music industry is not the same as the global music industry. So the way that people understand music here is 100% not the same as anywhere else in the world.
Can you elaborate a bit more on that?
It's just that the majority of the music industry is film music. That's where the biggest investments take place in film music. So why A.R. Rahman is not an indie music artist? The reason why he's been so successful is because he makes film music. And so in that sense, when I'm talking about independent music, I'm very much talking about people who have created their own music and original music that isn't necessarily attached to making it for a film. So you own those rights. It's not owned by your T-series and Tips and Saregamas of the world. So in that sense, like, that's what I'm not saying that you don't get signed to a label. I'm not saying any of that. You can still be, and when you say independent music, that's also very different. There are artists that are signed to labels and they are making original music. So my thing is that, like, I have to demarcate, like, the music industry into that, because the film music industry invests crores in making music, which is why that is so lucrative. Right? The kind of money that is made, because it's, music is a marketing machine. And if you're an independent musician, there are various avenues in which you have to make money. Either you're not, I will tell you this, there aren't as many people that are making money off streaming the way people think they are. You usually make money from events. That's usually like if you play a festival, if you're playing an event, if you have someone sponsoring you, that kind of thing. Labels also, of course, pay, but they take rights from you. So it depends. And when you're saying that, like, it's gritty and it's DIY, it's only that because there isn't much of a choice. There is a freedom in it, but there is also a restriction in it. So the internet has allowed you to open up, you know. I recently had a conversation with someone who, you know, was trying to release music in the 90s. And his name was Ankur Tiwari. And he said, I went to every label with a freaking cassette. And he's like, I got rejected by everyone. And so it's not easy even to get a label. Like, and now we're in a space where someone can just start an Instagram handle and upload their music onto Spotify and every other music streaming platform and become popular. Like, how did Meri Gali Mein become one of the, you know, become part of our pop culture zeitgeist.
What does that Meri Gali mean?
So I don't know if you've heard of a Bollywood movie called Gully Boy. Okay, so there is, it's actually based on two rappers, a guy called Divine and a guy called Nazy. And so the two of them collaborated and made a song. They literally came from the gullies of a chawl in like Bombay, and they became one of the biggest rappers in India now, particularly Divine. And so Zoya Akhtar saw them perform live at a venue in Bombay called Blue Frog and wanted to tell their story. And that's how Gully Boy happened. And so it's based on a real story. So when that, like that rap song became part of like mainstream culture, it was just a YouTube video they put up. And so the internet is this great place for discovery. But yes, like doing everything on your own, because making music is expensive and it's not easy. And you're a lot of the time, because I get sent so much music, I know my audio engineers are like weeping because some of them aren't mixed. They're not mastered properly. It's tough. And half the time we're doing some of that stuff when we're mixing our audio files. So dealing with music is very, very different. And so I'll say that the thing that we talk about being, you know, the epitome of the struggling artist, I do feel like a lot of those from the independent music space are that. It's not easy, but they do work hard. It is also, like I said, music is also unbelievably subjective. Just because you make music that you think is going to be great doesn't mean that everyone's going to necessarily like it. And I know that there are artists, which is why like I love what I do, because I get to discover so much amazing music coming out of like all the corners of the country. Whether it's like some cool punk band from Guwahati, or if it's, you know, a sort of dream pop band from Kochi, or some shoegaze band from Chandigarh. Like these are all amazing artists and they're doing something different. But the thing is that with the internet comes this, you're just in this hugely loud, crowded room. And so to be able to stand out, you know, within that hugely large crowded room becomes very difficult. And then creating opportunities for yourself, like, okay, I've put my album out, or I put this single out. Now I'm going to promote it on social media. I'm going to ask my friends to promote it. I'm going to make a music video. I'm going to try to play at a couple of venues. And then so at some level, like everyone is doing their best to keep doing what they're doing and putting their music out there. But it becomes very difficult to make it lucrative. I had, there's this band from Bangalore actually called Swaratma. And yeah, so I had them on my show a little while ago. And one of the things that they talked to me about is when the pandemic hit, they said something so interesting. They're like, you know, we as musicians, we don't have a pension plan. That doesn't exist. But one of the things that they did, and they've been around for now 20 years, is that they had decided they'll put little aside every like month into this sort of rainy day fund. And then when the pandemic hit, they were actually each able to get very small, but at least a tiny sort of salary out of that fund for all of them. And it wasn't much, but they were like, at least we got something. We weren't like not earning zero, because that would have been difficult. But that's because they're like a team, and they figured this out, that something would happen one day, and they had a contingency. But not all artists have a contingency, which is where, you know, where you come from, the kind of, you know, resources you have or don't have also make a huge difference as to like the kind of music you want to make or the career you want to have. You know, I know so many people who are ex-chartered accountants, ex-lawyers, ex-engineers, and they're all musicians, ex-hotel management people, all of them, who've all done like all these different kinds of things. And then only, you know, it's even more rare if you have to figure out like being a musician from the start.
To your point, if this is Swaratma, these are big guys. I'm only wondering what people like me who would have taken a plunge into something like this, into the indie artist space, what's the struggle like? It's and And also it's like, you know, it's a freedom of expression. It's a platform where you express, right? So there's a bit of a narrative that comes from each one of them. And to your point, not everybody aligns with both your style of music or the narrative. So then it's a lot dependent on these social media algorithms. It's a lot dependent on who you're connecting with, so on and so forth, isn't it? And that's hard, especially if you're not the network kind, if you're not the privileged kind. Oh, God.
It's hard because even artists that are, you know, successful, like I talked about Nazy, a wonderful rapper. I had a chance to interview him, you know, way before Gully Boy and stuff. And I remember one of the things that he told me was that even though he was earning money from his music, every time he wanted to go buy anything for his family, he'd be like, his family wouldn't accept it. He's like, I can't even buy like a bowl of fruits, because he was like, the money is haram. And so because he was earning it through this particular way. And so even if you're coming from a particular background where you want to support your family and you're proud of making money, we also come from a certain kind of, you know, some people might want to have to support their families. For some people, I know one band from Jaipur who he's like, I lied to my mother for years. She didn't know that she would think that I was still working. I wasn't. I was going and playing gigs. And yeah, a lot of people, it's not easy also if you're supporting a family. You can't just, you know, just choose to become a musician. You know, a lot of the time you're living at home or you're, you know, getting some support from your parents or something like that. Or maybe no support from your parents at all. And it is 100%, it's not an easy thing to become a musician in India, because we also come from a culture that doesn't look at music as being a lucrative, secure form of income, which as you and I are talking about, it isn't. And so it is definitely not an easy thing to be a musician in India. And I'm talking about someone who's making their own original music. I think that we're in an interesting time, because I feel like the internet has opened the opportunity for you to learn and to have an audience that you wouldn't have maybe had any other time before. And you can build some of that yourself, but it also becomes difficult, you know, to manage yourself. It's hard, especially if you're doing relatively well or if you have opportunities. How do you, because there is so much that also comes with being a musician, understanding how to look at contracts, understanding, I barely understand music copyright. I just about do. And it is so complicated. And even those kind of things require so much. And it is not easy to be able to understand even that much, that extent of it. So, yeah.
I think that especially when you're talking about independent musicians, they go into the depths of things. Like, you know, they know their art form, they know their music, they know their style. They're also very well informed in terms of the scenes around, the social environment around. They're very, very integrated to that, very current and aware of that. Is this a true assumption as you speak to so many artists across India, or is this more sort of segmented more towards tier one cities, or this is just Sauginya dreaming some?
I mean, I honestly think that depends. I think that some of the stuff that you talk about, I think is very generational. I think that the sort of Gen Zs and the generation after that might be slightly more well-connected to what is taking place in the world than maybe we are, or at least I am as a millennial or older. But more than a music thing, I feel like that's a very generational gap thing. The other is that I feel like a lot of musicians also work in isolation. They are not, because I can tell you this because of the fact that I have so many musicians who just don't understand how do I promote myself and where do I put myself out there and how do I get these opportunities and how do I get a gig at a venue and how do I do this? So I get asked those questions all the time from new artists because they just don't know where to begin. They've made a song. They don't know if even that song will do well. How do I distribute this song and where does it go and how do I market it or how do I promote it? And a lot of this stuff becomes not really easy access for everyone. So I would say that as much as, you know, musicians may want to make music, all the time, all of the other mechanics around it also aren't easy. So you can like just record a song and make it, but then who's going to mix and master it? Who's going to like, who's, you know, going to play guitar and how are you going to match everything? So some people, and I will tell you this, some people have been learning music from like the age of 3, you know, and there are some musicians who taught themselves in college because they thought it was cool to play guitar. But again, it's so varied. Like you cannot like box all musicians. It's like boxing all engineers into saying that all engineers are damn smart or they all engineers have no social skills. Of course they don't. There's some engineers who are incredible and articulate. And so I'm saying that like, it's like making one sweeping generalization about like one profession of people, which is, yeah, they're all very, very different from one another. And they may come from different different backgrounds and different economic status and all that kind of stuff. So it's not one thing or another. So, yeah.
So I want to take this a little back to you now. When we were talking, one of the things you spoke about was, it's a medium for me, the audio medium. I love it because it's also you who's invested in it. It's you who is pouring the heart and soul into it. And therein comes the narrative as well, right? It allows you to tell a story or give an experience to someone else or a lot of them. Tell me a little bit about this. Why is this so important? And how does it play a role in the end? You and I are sort of building communities, whether it is Made in India or Attitude Makeover. It's that segment of people who can relate with what we're talking, and therein comes the narratives as well. And that's where our personality is also part of it. So I want to understand that side of you, of the narratives, and how do you go about, how important is it in your work and in building that community?
Yeah. I would say that the thing about audio that I really do love a lot is that, and I have to be honest here and say it's the medium that I know best. I've been working in it for years and it is the thing that I understand the most. I'm also so highly, like everything that I observe is everything that I hear. And there are not that many people that I bond over, even in terms of like the weird things that I observe. So my Karthik, who's my head of audio production, is one of the people that him and I will always, because he is a sound person, so he's used to this. So him and I will, I'll send him something and I'm like, oh my God, how is this even like a thing? And like, I'll give you an example. There's this, I cannot remember his name. He's an Instagram chef or something. Like he basically is pretty popular. And there was something about his voice that was so inviting and warm, but it wasn't like a deep, he didn't have a deep, like, you know, Idris Elba type voice. He had this like very sweet, lovely quality to his voice. And he had like also like a slight like lisp in his voice, which is very endearing. Like anyone with a lisp sounds like there's something very, I don't know what it is, but like the texture and the quality of your voice also is inviting. And the thing that I sent it to him and I was like, this guy, I can't stop listening to him. There's something about his voice. And then he, you know, qualified that, oh, it's because of that like little lisp. And he has this like sort of very warm tone in his voice. And these are the nerdy things that I talk about. So I invariably am a nerd. So I'm a nerd about audio. And I think I'm a nerd in life. And I always feel like with me, the things that always fascinate me, I just nerd out about. And so audio was one of that. And I feel like I can be my most creative in this medium because I know it well. And I'm always listening to the way people speak. You know, even when someone's talking to me in another language, I may not understand the language, but I like accents. So I remember when I was coming back, we were going from Kerala to Chennai, and we stopped at Trichy. And the Trichy accent is so beautiful, and it's not like the Chennai accent at all. And I was asking my aunt, and she said that they speak a slightly pure form of like Tamil or something like that. And so even like the way people speak, like I may not understand anything anyone's saying, but I notice like the vocal quality. And so whether it's music, whether it's like, I'm just like an uber nerd about it. So I'll always be like, oh, this sounds really different. I don't understand why it sounds like this. Like, and so, yeah, these are all things that, like I said, I'm just a nerd about the things that I really love. And the audio medium is the one that I know the best, at least professionally, if not personally. So, yeah.
So when you engage with the community, have you seen, I mean, one of the things I found is when my podcast goes live, you know, it's like a trickle, right? Every time a new episode goes live, it's not like I get 100, 200 subscribers. It's like a trickle in the ocean. And and yet it is these messages and DMs that come, hey, this particular moment made me pause and think, and I really thank you for that. Those are very gratifying in some ways. And in some ways, I believe that's how the community is slowly building. How is it for you? How is that community aspect?
I mean, so I've been around for about 8 years. So I've been running Made in India, the podcast, for 8 years. And I would say that it is so validating when someone says that they listen to the show. Like, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, one of my producers who's handling our social media account, she forwarded this beautiful comment that came from one guy called Arun, who was commenting on an artist's profile, this guy from Chennai called Alvin Presley, who's, if you have not checked out his album, he is a wonderful musician. And Arun had commented on this Alvin Presley's song or something, saying that, you won't believe this, but I still go back to your podcast episode on Made in India when I feel depressed. And it helps me feel, it helps me pass the time. It helps me keep calm. It helps me maintain my sanity. And I was like, that not only shows me the value of just what Alvin did on that episode and his music and his stories, but the other is also that there is, and that's one of the huge differences, I think, with regards to running a music show, is there's actually repeat value for music. Like, one of the things is like, not everyone goes back. I don't go back to podcast episodes I've already heard. I'm like, I heard it already. But music has repeat value. And you don't listen to a song once saying, I've heard it once, I think I'm good. You will listen to it again and again. You'll go back to it 10 years from now, 20 years from now, which is why the value of music isn't that you listen to it only once. You can listen to it again and again and again, and everyone listens to it, and you go back to it, you listen to a club, bar, your house, your bathroom, everywhere. So music has that ability and that quality to it. So the thing is that, like, that also, you know, makes me feel so, it brings me real joy. And it's so good to know that, like, people go back to a lot of these episodes and listen to them again or listen to the music. And, you know, we also do this thing on the podcast. In the episode description, you can timestamp where the music is, so that some apps, at least a lot of the apps, you can click on the timestamp and it takes you directly to the song. So you can actually, like, put timestamps within your episode description. So if someone comes to your episode and says, oh, I already heard the talk part, I just want to hear the song, you can actually just click the timestamps and it takes you.
I do that for the podcast, and, you know, I give subtitles so you can just jump to whichever section you really want. But this is very interesting. And May, I actually think you give me hope.
Well, I think my job here is done.
Seriously, because, you know, it's daunting at times because some say it is charity, some say you're clueless and I don't know where you're headed. But but I do also hear a lot of people saying, what a beautiful platform you created. And it's that community that really holds turf and space for each other. And I think it's people like you that I talk to who also give me hope of, hey, stay put on this.
But
just get better and also, don't just waste time on being the same thing.
And I promise you, the thing is that this is where you get an opportunity to, like, I always say this, there's so many more things that you can do with your show. Don't ever go, okay, I'm making the show that is going to become the game. No, your show will change. My show, the show that I made, you know, I've made over 350 episodes of a podcast, and what my show sounded like on day one and, you know, 8 years later is not the same at all. And I have four different formats of my show. I've done short versions, long versions, mixtapes, full-blown studio sessions. There's so many formats of this show. So never feel like you're limited also by what you've already made.
I want, this is my final, I swear this is my final part of the conversation. This journey, you've gone through this for 8 years. I've gone through this just about 2 years now. I feel it's not just like how we started, it's not harmonious and dissonance, but it's also a sort of a self-discovery journey. Because we start seeing the inner you a lot more of what you like, what you don't like, what are boundaries, and so on and so forth. Tell me, from when you started to today, how have you discovered yourself? What's that transformation you've gone through?
I can definitely tell you the one thing that you will realize about your show and the thing that made me discover what it is that I was actually making. Is that as much as you're doing something where you're profiling someone or you're it's this person and this musician and who they are and what they're doing. And the show is actually a reflection of me. And it is a reflection of what I believe in, what I think about. I think this happened to me at the end of 2020 when I do this best of special where I pick out all the best songs that were, that were recorded on Made in India. And I do a best of, and then I basically sort of introduce each of these songs and the episode and the artist. And I was recording the voiceover for my best of in my cupboard. So a cupboard is a great place because usually if it's wooden, it's decent. For example, my grandmother, I told her that her sari cupboard is a great place for me to record views. So because I just put my head between all the saris, and you're sort of bound by, it's just cloth. It's all of it absorbs the reverb that I talk about. So, and then I just hold my little Zoom mic or whichever that I have with me. And then I record. And I was recording in my cupboard. I was recording my voiceover for my best stuff for 2020. And I had this moment where in one of the right last video that I had to record, there was this one line that I would say that, I just want to really thank everyone who's been listening to the show and kept this going. And it's been so and I started reading out this line, and I'm talking about this the end of 2020, which anyway was a mightily emotional year for everyone. I just started crying, just weeping. And then I was what is wrong with me? So I switched off my recorder. I got out of my cupboard and just wiped my tears. And I just went, okay. I'll just do this again. And then I did it. And the moment I hit that line, I started crying again, like an idiot. And then I'm like, what is wrong with me? And then I'm like, it's like, this not even like, what a question to ask. I'm sorry. That's a real jackass question to ask. Genuinely terrible. talk about supporting the patriarchy, man. Wow. No, it was not my time of month. Thank you very much. 2020 was an incredibly difficult year for anyone on planet Earth. Okay. And so I will tell you, as a business owner, as anyone, being emotional is not just that time of month. Being emotional can also be that you are in a high stress job, that life is really difficult for you, that like the things that you were used to, you're not used to anymore. And so, yeah. So the third time that I went to do my voiceover and I started tearing up again, I realized that, you know, the reason why I was tearing up is because of this. I've gone through a roller coaster of like ups and downs. And the thing that has like held me together is the show and the music and my team and whoever is like listening. And no, it wasn't based on my time of goddamn month. It was because I've been through a lot. And I had to allow myself to really be that. If I couldn't record my voiceover first time, second time, third time because of this, I decided that, you know what, I've gone through a tough time and it's okay if I get a little teary-eyed on my podcast. So yeah, I let that in there. I left in, and my engineer called me and he's like, should I take this out? I said, no, do leave it unedited. Don't even take out the gaps. Leave it all in there. And I choke up and I tear up and whatever. So as much as the show is, again, about music and musicians, it's also a huge reflection of me and where I've been in my life and about the things that I truly believe in and the things that are important to me and the things that I want to support and what I love and my silly ideas. It's just, it's so much of, it's all, you know, a little bit of me in like different places. And so even this, even me at my most vulnerable, me in my feeling literally like so unbelievably grateful for like having what I have, came out in that video. And yeah, it was, for me at least, it was weird, and I wouldn't say it was cathartic because it was embarrassing if not anything else, but I felt like it was important to keep in the show, and I felt it was important to show that. And never in my life would I have thought that the reaction I would get from another woman would be that, was it your time of month? But I'm just saying.
No, I I want to, first of all, call out that thank you for calling me a jackass, because I think one of the things that I always observe is these wife jokes, these woman jokes. Oh, to Rory, is it that time of the month? It must be that time of the month. And I think it's very important to, I think, again, it comes out that that belief of what you stand for really comes out. And I'm so proud to really have you in my podcast, because that call out,
like, called you out on the patriarchy.
No, it is required, because I feel annoyed.
Hey, I may call you out right now, but you also control, and you have more power than I do, because you can just snip this out the way that you want to make yourself also sound the way you want to sound and be represented on your show. So as much as you're saying I'm calling you out, and until I see you keeping this, I'll just know that, oh, she just very conveniently edited out this ridiculous comment.
And it was a very, look, I have a 15-year-old daughter, and I just, when you told me that, what a jackass. I said, spoken like my daughter, because that is, yeah, because that's exactly what she does, okay? I hope you like this conversation as much as I enjoyed it. I learned so much. I also am going back. I'm an optimist by heart, but today you've squared the optimism for me. Yeah. I'm going back more stronger. May, thank you so much. The question I started with of whether music really can help become a catalyst for personal transformation as well as collective transformation. I don't know if that we've got answers for that, but I do believe that when you believe in something and you drive something, that has the impact of both personal transformation as well as a collective transformation. That's a journey that you have been on, and that's a journey I am on. So Thank you for giving
me. I think
me
there's
that.
Like a, I mean, there's something that you're saying about music being a part of our personal transformation or anything of that sort. There is a reason why, like, music brings us together. Why do we have a national anthem? For what? It's the song that everyone knows the words of. It brings us all together. It reminds you of something, a place, a person. It's that, right? Like, in that same way, like, music has this ability to, like, bring you together, even if you, yeah. So it's a weird one, but yeah. There's something very intangible about it.
Well, thank you so much, May.